If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Starbucks announced yesterday that it plans to have 85% of its U.S. locations open by the end of the week before everyone remembers you can just make coffee at home for 9 cents.
Recorded from locations that are not 30 Rockefeller Plaza, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. On today's show, Seth chats with journalist Sarah Kendzior. But first, a closer look.
The president decided to give up in the fight against coronavirus in order to reopen the economy. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. You would think that putting aside his venality, his narcissism, and his deadly incompetence, Donald Trump could, at the very least, muster a little empathy for the victims of this pandemic, their loved ones, and the millions who have put themselves in harm's way, lost jobs, or made tremendous personal sacrifices during this crisis. But of course, he can't do that because he's incapable of empathy. He only has two emotions, boredom and rage. He's either staring off into the distance while someone talks about complex policy details or hissing at reporters like a snake whose nest was just disturbed. In fact, just listen to the cold, detached way in which Trump talked about allowing Americans to die in order to reopen the economy and the 30 million people who have lost jobs because of his handling of this crisis during an interview on ABC yesterday.
Do you believe that's the reality we're facing, that lives will be lost to reopen the country?
It's possible there will be some because you won't be locked into an apartment or a house or whatever it is.
There are 30 million Americans who are unemployed. You don't need me to tell you that. We're expecting the new unemployment rate this week. There have been forecasts 15, 16, 17%. One of your advisors projected an unemployment rate of 19%. That's nearly one in five Americans without a job. How bad is this going to get?
Well, that is what it is.
Wow, what soaring words. It reminds me of Martin Luther King's "I slept pretty good last night" speech, or FDR's famous response when they told him about Pearl Harbor. Well, happens. Usually when someone is that soulless and dead-eyed, you're not asking them questions about the economy, you're holding up a Rorschach test. And what is this, Donald?
It is what it is.
Very, very interesting. Okay, guards, you can put him back in his restraints now.
Oh, I don't think the guards can hear you. Donald, what have you done?
Yesterday, Trump also made his first major trip in months to tour a Honeywell factory in Arizona, a trip that gave us what may end up as one of the enduring images of this crisis. Trump toured a mask factory as his White House signaled they were basically just giving up on suppressing the coronavirus pandemic to focus on reopening the economy instead. And as he was doing that, someone chose to blast Live and Let Die on the speakers.
Material that traps the particulates.
Wow. Welcome to the resistance, Honeywell factory floor DJ? Doesn't get much more in the nose than that. What were the other songs on that playlist? You can hear all those classic hits and more on Now That's What I Call Symbolism. Live and Let Die playing while Trump tours a mask factory during a pandemic is the surest sign yet that we're living in a video game. And if we are in a video game, does anyone have the cheat code to get rid of wasps? Because I tried up, up, down, down, left, right, B, A, start, and that just made them angrier. Anyway, sure enough, during that same trip, Trump brushed off the growing death toll and said he was eager to force Americans back to work prematurely, telling them to think of themselves as participants in an armed conflict.
And you see what's going on. They have to open. And the people of our country should think of themselves as warriors. Our country has to open.
I'm viewing our great citizens of this country, to a certain extent and to a large extent, as warriors. They're warriors. We can't keep our country closed. We have to open our country. The people of our country are warriors, and I'm looking at it. I'm not saying anything is perfect, and yes, will some people be affected? Yes. Will some people be affected badly? Yes. But we have to get our country open, and we have to get it open soon. And I said it before, and I'll say it again. The people of our country are warriors.
That's right. Trump wants you to be a warrior while he sits safely in isolation in the White House.
I would join him, but I feel another bone spur coming on, which is devastating me because the last one happened right before the Vietnam War. I mean, what are the chances that it happens again now? I mean,
this is truly sadistic. The president is telling you to go out and face off against a deadly virus all for the sake of the stock market. The only way that could be more out of touch is if he said it while dousing himself in Purell and holding a 36-pack of toilet paper. Every day, it seems we pass a grim new milestone in the coronavirus pandemic, with more than 70,000 Americans now dead and at least 30 million out of work, which, according to Trump, means it's the perfect time to stand down and wrap things up.
We can't keep our country closed for the next 5 years. You know, you could say there might be a recurrence, and there might be. And, you know, most doctors or some doctors say that it will happen, and it'll be a flame, and we're going to put the flame out. We've learned a lot. You know, we've learned a lot about the coronavirus.
First of all, who's we? You haven't learned anything. Whenever the doctors are up there talking, you do that thing where you zone out and sway back and forth like a drunk guy who's trying to pretend he's sober. And then you get back up to the podium, having only heard like 3 words, and try to sound like you know what's going on.
So what I'm hearing is, what I grasped when the scientists were talking is that powerful lights will cure coronavirus and give you superpowers. You know, I saw that in a documentary once. Only doubt turns you green. That's the downside side effect. So, still pretty promising news.
You are incapable of learning. You showed up to the CDC in Atlanta surrounded by some of the best doctors in the world, and all you did was hold up a printout of a virus like a kid who forgot to do his science project until the last minute.
As you can see here, the virus is called Wikipedia. Side effects include further reading and external links.
Although, actually, I will give Trump credit. In the span of 2 months, he did at least learn one thing, the name of the virus.
So you can't put them down in the category of the overall population in terms of this corona flu.
Yes, corona flu. Remember when a deadly virus was racing across the globe and the president was getting intelligence reports about it and he got the name wrong, like the worst member of your bar trivia team? This English rock band is led by frontman Mick Jagger.
Oh, I know, it's the Rolling Stones. Rolling, of course, in America, they're called the Rolling Muffins. That's an extra piece of trivia.
Second, no one, and I mean no one, wants to keep the country closed for 5 years. It hasn't even been closed for 5 months, and we're already losing our minds. I spend 6 hours a day washing my hands. I wipe down every package like it's coated in anthrax. I've watched so much Netflix that my homepage says, "We have nothing left for you. Try Hulu." And I've inhaled so much Lysol, my urine smells like lemon zest. No one wants to live like this. In fact, we didn't have to. Lots of other major developed countries have successfully suppressed their outbreaks by acting early, testing aggressively, and implementing a system of isolating cases and tracing their contacts. Some never even had to fully lock down, and others have already reopened, like in South Korea, where they had their first case on the exact same day we had ours. And while here in the U.S., almost every day, at least 25,000 new coronavirus cases are identified. In South Korea, the rate of new confirmed cases of coronavirus has slowed down dramatically in recent weeks to less than 10 a day. Of course, if you pointed that out to Trump, he probably wouldn't accept it.
It's not a fair compare. South Korea is 13 hours ahead, so they had to jump on it.
In fact, while we're all stuck in our homes watching reruns of Blue Bloods at 2 in the afternoon, Korean baseball is already back playing games, just without fans. In fact, ESPN is now airing them here in the U.S., which has introduced us to some truly incredible team names, like the NC Dinos and the SK Wyverns, which are mythical winged two-legged dragons with barbed tails. Last year, they even used augmented reality to have a dragon fly into the stadium and breathe fire. Our baseball teams need more mascots like that. The only mythical creature we have is, I don't know, is it like an aardvark? Like a hairy aardvark who loves baseball? We've been highlighting success stories like that from South Korea to Iceland to New Zealand to Taiwan because they're out there. There are lots of countries with competent governments that managed to suppress the outbreak and allow their societies to safely return to some semblance of normalcy. Trump has repeatedly lied and claimed that, as he put it, the cupboards were bare when he took office 3 years ago, and that's why he's failed to fight the virus. But in a new ABC interview, Trump was asked why he didn't do anything to fix the situation.
You're 3 years into your first term.
Yeah.
You're now applying for the job again. What did you do when you became president to restock those cupboards that you say were bare?
Well, I'll be honest. I have a lot of things going on.
No, you don't. All you do is watch TV and whenever your aides let you out of your straitjacket, tweet. And when you're not golfing, you're tweeting about golfing. Like on Sunday when you retweeted a post from your golf course in Scotland claiming they'd been named best golf course in the UK and Ireland by a European golf magazine. So nice to see this great honor. Thank you, but haven't played golf in a long time. First of all, that's not true. You played golf in March with members of the Washington Nationals. Damn it, Nationals! You were supposed to be the feel-good team everyone could be happy with over the cheating Astros. Now, I mean, who are we supposed to root for when baseball comes back? The Mets? I mean, they're the only team that's doing better during quarantine. Pretty sure the last president they met with was William Henry Harrison, and then he died 10 days later. That was the year Mr. Met caught typhoid. And now, instead of taking any responsibility for the situation, Trump and his toadies on state TV are whining that he hasn't gotten enough credit for only letting 70,000 Americans die and 30 million lose their jobs, like human beer keg Jesse Waters on Fox News this week.
Can you imagine, Greg, the media, how they'd sound if Barack Obama were president during the pandemic? It goes something like this. Barack Obama, putting politics aside and sacrificing the key to a successful re-election, shut down the economy just in order to save lives. That's what it would sound like. Now, I know the president's not going to get great coverage like that, but the president just wants fair coverage because he never got credit for winning the election. They said Russia cheated. He never got credit for the economy. They said it was Barack Obama's. And he's not getting credit for anything, for ventilators, for flattening the curve.
My God, you sound like the whiniest pledge in Sigma Chi. The dean is shutting down our blackface party, completely ignoring the fact it was a fundraiser to help local cocaine dealers. The U.S. is the richest and most powerful country on Earth, and yet we're also the epicenter of a deadly outbreak that has been suppressed in lots of other countries. And now the president wants to send you to war against the virus for the sake of the stock market, but at least when he does send you to war, he'll do so with this soaring battle cry.
That is what it is.
This has been A Closer Look.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Our guest is a New York Times best-selling author. Her new book, Hiding in Plain Sight, is available now. Please welcome back to the show, Sarah Kendzior. How are you, Sarah?
As well as can be expected. How are you?
I'm good. I like that in your bookshelf behind you, you're using it to very smartly promote your new book.
Oh, yes. Of course.
Well, we were talking, you obviously had a book tour planned. You were actually going to be on our show in the studio back in, I guess, in March. So how has it been having a new book out that obviously you've worked on for years and not being able to go out and promote it?
I mean, I'm sad about it. I'm sad that I didn't get to, see my readers face to face, but I'm mostly thinking about safety and I wouldn't want to put anyone in that position. And there are certainly people who are having a much harder time in this economy and in this public health crisis than me. The book itself is about the danger of this administration and the erosion of stable institutions, not just in the present, but over the last 40 years. So paradoxically, this is a good time for the book to come out.
So I want to talk about the book, but real quick, you recently tweeted the last time you were on the show, and again, it was nice that you got to see the other guests. Mm-hmm. You were backstage, you got to meet Ice-T, and mm-hmm. here is the photo that you tweeted. And is it true that your mother has this framed?
Oh, yeah. I gave it to her as a Mother's Day gift because I sent it to her and she loved it. And then, you know, I surprised her. So she has it on her mantle because, like every baby boomer, huge Ice-T fan, Law and Order, completely forgot that she confiscated my Body Count cassette in, like, 1991. So, you know.
Well, it's a shame because, you know, the first guest tonight was Ice Cube. So I like that there's something thematic about the times on your show.
As long as this doesn't lead to Vanilla Ice the third time around, then I'm all good with this trend. So
last time you were on, you were talking about your book, View from Flyover Country. And it was a lot about sort of you had studied autocratic regimes and how they, you know, have this way of sneaking up on people, exactly what is happening to the, you know, systems they rely on. You obviously wrote this book. You couldn't have imagined the moment we were in right now, but it does sort of predict that if things don't change, this is the sort of thing we were going to end up with, right?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't predict that I would be talking to you during a plague from our self-quarantine, but in terms of malice, in terms of kleptocracy, in terms of the profound erosion of institutional stability and social trust, this is what I expected from the Trump administration, because we've had this kind of facetious, unearned, reliance on checks and balances that were never really there. They were not applied at the start of his administration, and he has spent the last 4 years annihilating them, purging agencies, packing courts, basically stripping this country down and selling it for parts. And so, yeah, here we are.
Well, you point out that the media sometimes will focus on Trump's ineptitude, but you think the mistake there is it ignores the more sinister side of it.
Yes, absolutely. I think that the media, as well as many people, are just comfortable thinking of him as a buffoon that stumbled into the presidency, like it was an accident. But that's not true. And as I lay out in the book, he ran or nearly ran for president 5 times, 1988, 1996, he ran in 2000, he ran in 2012, he ran in 2016. And one of his enduring strategies has been to cover up his crime with scandal and to cover up his malice with incompetence. A lot of people are shocked by his reaction to the pandemic, that we haven't had a national mourning, that the flag hasn't even been lowered to commemorate the victims and the people who tried to save them. But that's completely in line with his character. When 9/11 happened, his first reaction was to say it made his buildings look taller. When the 2008 financial collapse happened, he said that it was a good thing for him, that he would profit. And back in 2014, he went on Fox News and said that he wanted economic collapse and he wanted riots and violence in the street, because that's what makes America great again.
You don't hold back in your book as far as like naming names. And I think a way a lot of times some journalists not only fear, you know, the shutting down of access for projects they might do in the future, but also, you know, for personal safety. When you are specific about people, do you ever fear for your safety when you write?
I mean, of course I fear for my safety. And we've seen a lot of examples of this administration and people connected to it threatening people. You know, we just had an impeachment hearing where the ambassador to Ukraine basically said that Trump and his goon squad ordered a hit on her. That's a huge deal. And there's a long history of that kind of action. I worry about my safety, but I'm more worried that the truth of this administration and its history isn't being told. And so that's what, you know, I have chosen to do in this book and through my other work. And I don't care about access. You know, I live in Missouri. I'm not worried about not being invited to a cocktail party or, you know, whatever the hell people do in D.C. And so that's never really been an issue for me. And, you know, perversely, it gives me a certain kind of freedom.
You talk a lot, not just in the book, but also on your podcast about the elections in November. How much confidence do you think the American people can have in a fair election right now? And I do think, you know, sometimes when you talk about it, it's a little dangerous because obviously the Trump administration, based on the outcome, will also speak to the idea that it was not fair. So how do you frame it so that it just doesn't become a thing that everyone can sort of use for their own best interests?
Yeah, I mean, everyone is going to claim that it's rigged. That was a little trick they pulled in 2016 by, you know, Trump constantly saying it was rigged. It forced the Democrats into this position where they're like, it can't be rigged. And then when it was in some respects rigged, they had nothing to say. What they should be doing is pushing for election transparency and integrity early. They should be pushing for vote by mail because of the coronavirus, because of the dangers we are being put in by having physical voting. I've been worried about the integrity of this election for a long time before the virus came around. I've been worried about domestic voter suppression, foreign interference, insecure machines, and Trump simply refusing to leave. My new worry is that perhaps the election will be delayed or kind of indefinitely postponed. Usually, even autocrats love elections. You know, they like to have a fake election so that they could brag about the people's love. And I didn't think that Trump would turn down an opportunity to do that. But given this unprecedented public health crisis, it's uncertain what direction they'll go.
Don't take this the wrong way. There is a core pessimism to a lot of what you write about. But do you feel as though there might be a chance to come through this on the other side with a changed perspective from the American people? And where do you find optimism?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think about it so much in terms of optimism or pessimism or hope or hopelessness. I just try to do the right thing. You know, when you have so much chaos, when you have so much instability, you really have to look at your morals and your principles and how you treat people and the kind of life that you want to lead. And so I just try to do the right thing. I do try to make suggestions that are helpful in that respect. But I'm not going to have blind faith in eroding institutions that we've already seen fail. You know, what Americans, I think, have recognized by now, that institutions are only as good as the people who are willing to uphold them. And sometimes they have to uphold those institutions in the face of profound and unprecedented threats. And so far, that has not really happened. That doesn't mean it's too late. It doesn't mean that we're doomed. It does mean we're in for a rough ride and that we really have to get our bearings and focus always on telling the truth and treating people right.
Thank you so much, Sarah, for making time for us again. Obviously, I wish this would be in the studio, and hopefully next time it'll be in person. Please check out Sarah's new book, Hiding in Plain Sight. We got a couple copies for you. And thanks, Sarah.
Late Night with Seth Meyers airs weeknights on NBC at 12:35, 11:35 Central. Original music on the Late Night podcast is by the HE Band. Don't forget to follow the handle Late Night Seth on social media and tell your friends to subscribe to the Late Night podcast wherever they get their podcasts.
Once upon a beat. Remember the stories and fables that captured your imagination when you were young? We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remixed and reimagined for the kids in your life today. Yeah. Wondery and Tinkercast are bringing you a music-filled weekly party hosted by me,
DJ Fuse,
and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, spinning tales in the New Kids and Family podcast, Once Upon a Beat, where hip-hop and fables meet. Hey, grown-ups, listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.
Once Upon a Beat.